Hello. I'm very happy to be with you today when we're going to explore a tragic story, but one that's got a very happy ending. It relates to a situation where a father is absent from the story, and so he can offer no support or help to his wife or indeed his son. But Jesus takes the place of the father, the absent father, and brings transformation and hope. And he hasn't changed. So let's read the story, and my wife Judy will do this.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be reading from Luke chapter 7, verses 11 to 16. Jesus went into a village called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and a large crowd. And when he came near the gates of the village, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the village was with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." Then Jesus came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still. And Jesus said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." So he who was dead sat up and began to speak. And Jesus presented him to his mother. Then awe came upon all, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has risen up amongst us, and God has visited his people."
Thanks, Judy. So who's recording this story? And why did he record it in the first place? Well, it's Luke. And he wrote his gospel about 30 years after Jesus had left this earth. And he's writing mainly to non-Jewish people, people who are aware of many gods, but they don't expect anything good from them. They're not good enough to receive benefits from the gods. Now, Luke's very interested in people, especially those who are marginalized. And that includes women, who in the first century were viewed as second-class citizens. So it's no surprise that most of the stories that are unique to Luke concentrate on individuals, especially those who don't have significant status in society, just like the woman in our story. You see, Luke's got a plan. It's to show that Jesus has come with good news for everybody, but also including those on the fringes of society, including those who have an absent father. Let's see how he does it. Well, first, before this particular story, Luke records another one. This time, Jesus heals a centurion's servant. Now, as a centurion, he's very important, but he represents the pagan power of Rome. He's in charge of 100 legionnaires, but they're an object of hate and fear. And of course, he's not a Jew. In other words, he's not worthy of Jesus' time, and he knows it. In fact, Luke tells us that Jewish elders of the village affirm him as if to say, "Jesus, we know he's a Gentile, but he's a good man. Please help him." And Jesus does, even though he's a marginalized person. And Luke is setting us up with a question. Can anybody else benefit from Jesus, especially somebody more marginalized than this centurion? And so we're introduced to the widow of Nain. So let's revisit the story. Now, the resurrection of the widow's son is uniquely recorded by Luke. It's very special for him and for his readers who aren't used to a God who's interested in people, especially marginalized people. But also, this is different to the previous story, because the widow's son isn't dying like the centurion's servant. No, he's dead. And Jesus has never done this before in Luke. Or he's healed a leper and a paralyzed man and the centurion's servant who was dying, but this widow's son is dead. And Jesus has never done this before. It's a big ask. Can he do it? But then, why is the name of the village mentioned? It's not often mentioned when Jesus goes to different places. This time it is. It's Nain. Now, interestingly, Nain is a Hebrew word and it means beauty or lovely or green pastures. It represents a pleasant place. Really? In these circumstances of death and despondency? Also, it's not an important place. In fact, Jesus only goes here once. But why go at all? You see, so much has already happened in the place that Luke has mentioned before, Capernaum. Lots of miracles had happened in Capernaum. A demonized man was transformed. Peter's mother-in-law was healed. The centurion's servant was healed. Jesus had healed other people in Capernaum. He'd healed the son of an official in the king's court. It was in Capernaum that Jesus had enabled his disciples to catch fish miraculously. Capernaum was the place to get healed. Capernaum was the place to be to see something miraculous. Nothing happened in Nain. Capernaum was the ministry base for Jesus after he left Nazareth. It was where he taught regularly in the synagogue. It was where he preached his sermon on being the bread of life. But now, Jesus goes to Nain. Why? It's only mentioned here in the Bible. Capernaum is mentioned 16 times. It was a busy, important trading center, but Jesus travels a long way from there to get to this tiny village, Nain. 50 miles. It's a long way to walk. Why does he do it? What's so important about Nain? Well, it's very interesting. The people who lived in Nain had moved from another place called Shunem, which is a few miles away, a town that no longer existed by the time of Jesus. The people of Shunem had decamped to Nain, a little village that only exists in the time of Jesus. Is there anything interesting about Shunem that we need to know about? Well, yes. It was in Shunem that the Old Testament prophet Elisha raised another son from the dead. Couldn't happen again, could it? Then a mother goes to Elisha because she believes he can help. No, he's not convinced he can help, and he only goes with her because she insists. But he knows he's out of his depth, and he is. But he tries to raise the son back to life, but he fails 3 times. But on the 4th time, the resurrection occurs. Now the question is, can Jesus do better? He's never done it before. Well, let's check out our main character in this story, this lady. Well, first of all, and obviously, she's a woman. But remember, that means that she's viewed negatively in Jewish society, morally, intellectually, socially, religiously. She's a second-class citizen. How will Jesus respond to her, who owns this low status? But then she's a widow. Now, a widow in Jewish society was actually associated with shame and reproach, as if it was her fault that she was a widow. The fact that tithes were to be given to widows and that they were not to be mistreated indicates their vulnerability. Generally, widows were not eligible to inherit their husband's estate, and any future remarriage of a widow was not looked on very kindly. Oh yes, this lady, this widow of Nain, is a most marginalized woman with no husband to help her, no father to walk by her side. And now she's lost her son, her only son, who has died young. She's already lost her husband, and now she's lost her only son. And no father holds her hand. No father walks this path with her. Her situation is desperate. There's no male member in her immediate family to support her. Her vulnerability is clear for everybody to see. No one asks Jesus on her behalf, like the centurion did in the previous story. For this lady, there's no father standing by. And her grief is further emphasized in that, following normal procedure in the first century, the son has probably died that very day, and that's why the body is being taken to burial before nightfall. And after that, there'll be 30 days of mourning. The start of a so sad month is about to commence for this woman. She may have wondered, what did she do to deserve such a calamity? Why had God allowed it to happen? Well, she's soon going to find out that God himself has come to her village specifically to resolve the situation in the person of Jesus. Luke doesn't want us to miss her importance to Jesus, and so he refers to her 7 times in the story. Why? Because Jesus cares for the lonely, for those who have no father to stand with them. Now, where does Jesus actually meet the woman? Well, interestingly, it's at the village gate, which, by the way, is where Elisha met the woman whose son had died. Jesus, the giver of life, meets death personified in the corpse, and they meet at the boundary gates of the village. You see, bodies were to be buried outside villages, and the meeting occurs at the threshold of that final journey, a journey away from the village which represent home, and a journey to the place where she'll say goodbye forever to the only male left in her life, and her trauma will be complete. But Jesus changes her direction and changes a hopeless journey from her house to a hope-filled journey back home. What does he actually do? Well, Luke tells us that Jesus saw her, and the tense in the original Greek indicates a decisive glance. He wasn't looking at the crowds, he saw her. And the word that is used by Luke is also interesting because it's not the normal Greek word for seeing. No, the word used by Luke refers to someone who sees, but at the same time they understand, they perceive, they know more about the one that they're seeing. And Jesus truly knew her situation. Nobody told him. He didn't need anybody to tell him. He knew more than what he simply saw with his eyes, because he saw right inside her. And he saw her despair. And that's our Jesus. No wonder that Luke tells us that Jesus had compassion on her. Interestingly, compassion is rarely used of Jesus, and it's mainly of crowds. This is the only time Jesus is described as having compassion on an individual. Here, uniquely, Jesus has compassion on one person, a woman. A widow who stands without a father standing by her. But there's something else. Luke also tells us that Jesus went out of his way to meet her. And the word that describes this is used by Luke 8 times to refer to people coming to Jesus. This is the only time that it's used of Jesus going to a person. Jesus goes to her. She doesn't speak. She just weeps. But it's Jesus who functions center stage. It's his words that are recorded. He takes control of the situation and resolves the trauma. It's all about her. And how does he fix the situation? Well, first he says, don't weep. It's the only time when Jesus says to an individual, don't weep. And you can only imagine her consternation when this stranger suggests that she should not weep at the death of her only son. Why would he say that? Unless he's hinting that something is about to happen that would mean that she need not cry any longer. And then, shockingly, he touches the coffin. Why does he do that? He didn't need to touch the coffin for the funeral procession to stop, but touching the coffin was enough for the men carrying it to stop and to be shocked, because they knew what it meant. Jesus had become ceremonially unclean. Ah, but that's okay, because Jesus isn't contaminated by death. He's the victor over death. After all, Luke refers to Jesus as the Lord. He's supreme. And then to prove it, he says to the dead man, "Arise." Jesus transforms the situation with one word. No prayer is needed, just one word, "Arise." And the man sits up and he speaks, clear evidence that a remarkable event has occurred. There's no mention of faith on the part of anybody present. No request that Jesus might intervene. No hope expressed that he might. But Jesus doesn't function as the healer of broken hearts only when he's asked to help. And here he takes the initiative and he provides that which no one in the crowd would have ever thought possible. And then finally, Jesus gave her son to his mum, a personal touch. No wonder that the people referred to Jesus as a great prophet. They're probably thinking about the resurrection performed by Elisha. But how great a prophet is Jesus? You see, Luke regularly permeates his gospel with pathos as we get to learn that the majority of people will change their minds about Jesus, including those in Capernaum who saw many miracles, but they still rejected Jesus. Would the people of this village be any different? But they also conclude this. They say, "God has visited his people." Now, that same concept is used just once elsewhere in Luke, where it refers to a prophecy in which God is to visit his people in order to redeem them. And here, Jesus takes on that role, fulfilling that prophecy, and it's a marginalized woman who's the recipient of this gift. You see, Jesus is not just a prophet through whom God works. No, no. He's God himself, come to transform someone who has no concept that he might even want to help her. And he's come in person, and he's the same today. Jesus, the Prince of Life, travels 50 miles to a marginalized woman whose life has been robbed of everyone worthwhile, her son and his father. And there are disciples with Jesus and crowds of people with Jesus, but interested in them? No, he's not. It's this one woman that he speaks to, not to the disciples, not to the crowds, not to those who've come with her, but to her. And as she re-enters the village, her future beckons her with hope. And it's Jesus who's made it possible. By the way, the following story records a moment when John the Baptist asks Jesus, "Are you the one that we should be looking for, or is there another?" And as readers of the story, we say to John, "Absolutely, he is the one. Follow him. He's wonderful. He's on your side more than you can imagine." And that's the message of our story. Whatever our situation, whether we have a life partner or not, whether we have a father or not, whether we live on the fringe of society or not, whether we know Jesus or not, the point is, he knows us. And he has a plan for us, and it's this: to stand with us, next to us, to stand beside us when no one's there, and to do us good, whether we have a father or not. That's our Jesus, then and now. And remember, just as with this woman, he was already on his way to her. She just didn't realize it. And Jesus is with you now. Of course you can't see him, but he's there. Let me pray. Thank you, Jesus, for your desire to transform our lives, whether we know you already as our friend or not. So we ask you to walk with us. Thank you that you know our situations. Thank you that you want to partner us today. Come into our lives in a new way, I pray. Amen.